Hello, this is Erica Milam, and I'm here with the second session for the interview with Dr. Evelyn Howell on December 5th of 2003.
Yes, hello.
So, the first question that I have is if you could please talk about the most important committees on which you have served or governance positions which you have held.
Well, let's start with university committees, because yep. I've also done things in the community.
Yeah.
And I'll preface this by saying that ever since I was a student here, coming in as a grad student, what impressed me about UW-Madison is its faculty governance tradition, where mm-hmm. faculty not only have rights, but we have responsibilities in making sure the institution runs smoothly. So, in terms of service, I've done a variety of things. I was on what's called the University Committee, which is the supposedly the highest elective office you can hold university-wide.
Excellent.
And the University Committee, among other things, is in charge of the agenda for the Madison Senate, the Faculty Senate. And in fact, I was the chair of the University Committee for what amounted to about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Where among my duties was chairing the Senate and mm-hmm. Being the one who was the point person to represent the faculty on a variety of issues.
Yeah.
And so
this was 1996, 97?
No, I'm going to have trouble. 93 to 97 is what
okay.
I recall.
Okay.
And I was the head of the committee in 96, 97, that's
okay.
right. And the issues in those days, which aren't all that long ago, I guess, were interesting because much of this material that we found ourselves spending time on was generated not by internally from the faculty, but more from external things, like the Board of Regents coming up with ideas, or the tenor of the times questioning the idea of tenure, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had quite a lot of discussions about rather important topics such as those. And it was very interesting being a kind of a person sitting at the top with the chancellor and also the Catherine Lyle, the system president, thinking about and hearing what they were talking about and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I also served in at those same years on the board of the faculty's lobbying group, which is called PROFS, which is an organization that you can belong to by paying dues, which lobbies the legislature.
Okay.
And so at the one point I was president of the PROFS board, so my job was to arrange for lobbying sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And lobbying for us meant more getting to know the legislators and having them know who we were, so that we weren't this anonymous university faculty
mm-hmm.
for which they had some very interesting ideas about what faculty members really do, and trying to work with the legislature better to look at it upon us a little bit more favorably
mm-hmm.
Than they sometimes did. And I think we were, in the long run, fairly successful in those in
mm-hmm.
that regard, even though, of course, we never all, nobody ever gets everything they want. But
right.
So it was quite an interesting experience, especially for someone who had started out so shy.
Yeah.
And I've also served on many, many other committees in the university.
Right.
Too many to list, but they include the Arboretum Committee, where I at one point chaired the task force that dealt with deer management in the Arboretum, trying to come up with a reasoned policy for managing the herd
mm-hmm.
in the face of a lot of public concern over the culling of the herd by shooting. And
right.
Our subcommittee, I think I can say fairly honestly, was successful in heading off the controversy and explaining really why we were doing the technique we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And went through a whole lot series of logics as to why this was the way that we chose, and
yeah.
kind of killed the controversy, if you want to use that choice of words.
Yeah.
And so I've also been on a variety of curriculum committees at the college level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently on the Biological Sciences Executive Committee dealing with curriculum. And almost all the ones I'm mentioning now are elected committees, so you stand for election
mm-hmm.
throughout the university.
Mm-hmm.
In the college itself, I've been on the committees dealing with affirmative action, pay equity, student conduct, also some curriculum committees, and several others, and these would have been appointed by the dean.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Department of Landscape Architecture, I've been department chair twice. This is my second term coming up, starting with my first one in 1988. And mm-hmm. That first one was for 5 years, and this one just began, so we don't know how long it'll be for.
Okay.
Probably about the same. So those are the types of things I've done in mm-hmm. the university. Now, elsewhere, I have been on the Natural Areas Preservation Council, which is a citizens advisory group to the Department of Natural Resources dealing with natural area protection. And I've served on that committee as well as chaired it, and I'm currently the vice chair, but I'm about to step down from that, thank goodness, and be a member again. And our organization has done a variety of things dealing with policy issues on the properties that the state owns and manages as natural areas, as well as advising acquisition of mm-hmm. other properties. And I've been on that committee, I'm guessing, about 15 years now in one capacity or another. I also, in the city of Madison, have been on several committees, including the Madison Parks Commission, which I chaired for about a year and a half and served on for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that commission, of course, is the body that makes policy for the city of Madison Parks. And I was particularly interested in the conservation parks, which deal with my area of interest, restoration ecology.
Yeah.
So most of my service has been local. And a lot of this is because for the last 15 years or so, it's been hard for me to leave town because of an elder care situation.
Okay.
So I'm trying to do what I can with my expertise, et cetera, in a place where I don't have to travel very much for meetings.
Yeah.
So I have been not very active as active as I would have liked to have been in some of the national organizations
mm-hmm.
that I belong to but can't volunteer when you have to leave and go somewhere else for meetings.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the things that you mentioned was the Affirmative Action Committee
yes.
on
mm-hmm.
campus.
Yep.
Would you be willing to talk a little bit about how that operated?
Well, there are a couple of them I've been on, so
okay.
It's hard. I may not be able to tease apart which one did what because
right. that's,
so,
yeah.
there's so much that's been going on. But the committee, I'll just lump them together,
okay.
had several kinds of interest. One of them had to do with pay equity. And we participated in a study that looked at the salaries of men and women faculty here on campus. And at one point, the result of that was putting in extra money to many women in order mm-hmm. to correct what was seen as a discriminatory practice. And what was interesting about all of these studies was why women often came in or had lower salaries than their peers after mm-hmm. several years. And there were a lot of factors pointed to, among which were women tended not to play the hiring game to the extent that men did, meaning many times the way in which salaries increase is because you get an offer from somewhere else and the
right.
university then makes a counteroffer. And women tended not to put their names forth for those kinds of applications.
Mm-hmm.
And we think partly because they had family commitments and didn't feel they could move that easily.
Mm-hmm.
Another factor had to do with the early years of a woman's contract where they didn't have the same kind of savvy in negotiating startup packages. And
mm-hmm.
we talked last time about the fact that I had essentially no startup package when I
yeah.
came in. I was naive about it and didn't think about it or know about it. And so some of the things that we did in various capacities was try to establish mentoring committees and other
mm-hmm.
things. And I certainly was not the prime mover on those initiatives, but I certainly supported them
mm-hmm.
when they came along.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that the committees were interested in is affirmative action from the standpoint of minorities and the climate that is faced by members mm-hmm. of minority groups. Whether they be women, which fortunately now is getting to be less of a minority on campus, or racial minorities, or whatever they call the sexual like gay and lesbian and so on
yeah.
issues. And we had quite a few committees dealing with hearing folks who were very, very upset over the way that they felt they were treated on campus. And those were very sad committees to serve on because we heard testimony that was really very sad in terms
mm-hmm.
of discriminatory actions that happened or just offhand remarks or things
yeah.
of that sort. And I dealt with that not only as looking at faculty but also students and the climate that students faced. And I also served on the committee where we had to balance free speech versus hate speech. Yeah. And this happened a few years ago, and I served on that committee, and was a very painful experience because of the concerns by the students who were being felt that they were being slurred, and found that their learning was suffering because they felt that they were unable to be a full participant in a class because of remarks that were made, and balancing that versus the freedom of speech and academic freedom that's so important in a campus. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of things that happen in those committees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's tough.
Yeah, well, they were very tough and very, but very important that I participated, because I feel that at least I tried, and I'm a little bit more aware, more empathetic towards what goes on campus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you've mentioned a bunch of these already.
Oh, I'm anticipating questions.
Yes, yeah. No, that's totally fine. So, I mean, the question is to, if you could talk about your service activities relating to your field that have been most significant to you. And you've mentioned a number of the sort of committees around the university and in the Madison area, like the International Crane
Foundation. Yes, I worked on, I didn't mention it, but I worked on the, been on the board of an advisory board for the International Crane Foundation, and a lot of the conservation groups that I have dealt with, also the Nature Conservancy, which I didn't mention that I served on the board of, have been very rewarding, because I feel like we've made a difference in the natural systems in the state, protecting them, setting policies so that folks take care of them, and I feel very rewarded by that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One question, I know that the BioCorps program has a sort of, I mean, that one of the large components of the laboratory is the sort of the restoration of the prairie, and then also that there are all of these activities associated with a class, like going out and gathering the seeds,
right,
and getting, there's a field activity that the students are required to do.
Right.
So have you incorporated sort of this kind of outreach approach into other classes that you've taught?
In fact, every class, with only one exception, which is a graduate seminar that's called Theories of Landscape Change, and it just doesn't seem to make sense to do that.
Yeah.
All the other classes that I teach have some service component involved, service learning is now called, because partly this is a tradition in landscape architecture. The way that we teach studio courses is most effective if the problems students are faced with are real problems, so that they are real sites with real clients and real concerns that deal with designing outdoor space.
Yeah.
And leading off from that, when I came to this department, I saw the benefit of those kinds of experiences, because the students really were doing problem-based learning, which is another buzzword now, in that they had to learn material as they were solving problems, and which to me is an ideal way to learn, because then the context is there and the students really see relevance of it. And so having seen that, every class I do is a very active learning kind of class, and I do want students to work with real sites and real people and real problems and feel that they are giving back to the community. So it's all of a piece, really. It works because it's problem-based, it works because it's relevant to the students, and it also gives students a feel that they're being taken seriously and that their learning is not only for them, but for society, which I feel strongly about, especially because we often deal with an age group that is self-centered developmentally. And I don't mean that in a real negative sense, but my understanding is that part of development, you begin being self-centered, at least one theory says it, and then you move more outwardly later. And I do see that, at least in a lot of our students, and it really helps sometimes for them to even feel better about themselves if they feel they've been productive in helping other people. So all of our classes in landscape architecture are basically studio-based in restoration ecology, for example. So we have projects every year where they do designs and plans for a real place with real clients. And sometimes the Nature Conservancy, sometimes the Arboretum, sometimes the campus natural areas, sometimes Fish and Wildlife, sometimes private owners, just depends.
Yeah.
And the Biocork Prairie that you mentioned is, of course, part of the campus natural areas. And this restoration is not only helping the Biocork program by providing a very exciting laboratory with complicated data and complicated questions for students to try to learn ecology and other parts of biology from, but it's going to be there for the good of the greater campus.
Okay, thank you. And then, so I guess then the next questions that I'll ask will be about honors awards, professional society memberships.
Right.
So if you could discuss the professional organizations to which you belong, the extent of your involvement, sort of posts or that you've held within those, et cetera.
Right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, because I am kind of tied to the local area at this point, and as I began to really feel confident in my career, I have not really held any offices in professional organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to the Ecological Society of America, and I belong to the Society for Ecological Restoration, which are the two big fields in my area, or big organizations in my area.
Yeah.
And I attend meetings when I can, especially when they're local.
Yeah.
I also belong to the American Society of Landscape Architects because I'm in this department. Excuse me. So I feel I have to do that.
Yes.
And again, I haven't done much in the way of service work for them. I think we better, because I'm about to.
Great.
Okay.
So the organizations, though, are very important, even if I'm not an actual officer, because I do get to influence people who are officers, including people like Joyce Edler on campus, who is very active in the Ecological Society, and some folks active in the restoration group. And so what I do is kind of take them aside and say, hey, what's happening next, and things like that.
And could you comment on any honors or awards you have received?
Well, I haven't received too many. I'm a pretty low-profile person here. I do have a teaching award I got from the college many years ago now, which I'm happy about because I do take a lot of put a lot of effort into teaching and really think about it a whole lot. So, but nope, I don't have much I can say.
And then sort of the final, do you have any final comments on your career to date at the university or future plans for what you're going to do next?
Well, of course, I'm hoping to be here for a while yet.
Yes.
And, and so my plans really are to, from the standpoint of department chair, which I'm just embarking on for another session, is to do the best I can to raise the visibility of our department in the college and the university, because we're a low-profile department and we're misunderstood because people think landscape architecture involves doing home designs or garden designs for very wealthy people. And although that is something that happens, it's certainly not the only thing landscape architects do. Many of us are engaged in, as I am, in conservation issues, for example, or cultural resource preservation. And so I'm trying to get the message out that we have a very valuable set of skills to offer many parts of the society. So that's one thing I'm going to be working on. And then from the standpoint of restoration ecology, I'm hoping to put together a couple of textbooks on restoration ecology. I'm dealing with a couple of collaborators from campus here on those. And so those are the things I'm working on at the moment. Two textbooks, one of which is traditional and the other is more of a multimedia textbook with video clips and things like that. So I'm working on those things. That's going to be fun. And then I'm still trying to keep my hand in doing restoration experiments, et cetera.
Yeah.
And one of the joys we haven't talked a whole lot about is graduate students, because I have had many. In fact, I now have 12 working under me, many of whom are at the master's level because landscape architecture has a terminal master's degree. But I find teaching and mentoring grad students to be extremely important and very interesting, especially those who are master's candidates, because this is the first time that they have tried to really come up with a research topic and craft a problem that is reasonable and rewarding and relevant. And we spend a lot of time doing that one-on-one, because I don't have a traditional science lab the way many of my colleagues do, where we're all working together on different aspects of one topic.
Right.
Instead, I prefer working out with each person to develop his or her interests and skills in a way that can get them to learn how to do research and how to approach funding questions and site selection questions and different ways of approaching it.
Yeah. So in landscape architecture, is there... So there's a research thesis component associated with the master's degree?
Yes. Our program is different from many departments of landscape architecture in that we only offer a research-based master's program.
Okay.
And the projects that the students turn out are, I would say, halfway between a typical master's project and a dissertation. They're not certainly not as extensive as a dissertation is, but they are more involved than some master's programs where it's a relatively quick thesis. It takes our students usually 3 to 3.5 years to finish, largely because of the thesis, not the coursework. And we, again, those who work with me pretty much are developing things from the beginning so that they're learning how to pose a testable question and go through the funding issues and so on.
Right, I can imagine that funding is difficult.
It's very difficult, yes. Most often the students can get money for supplies and equipment and transportation and things of that sort. It's much harder to get money as a stipend. But then we have a lot of students that work with me who are teaching assistants and other things.
Yeah. What kinds of projects have some of your students done that stand out as memorable?
Well, gosh, there's so many wonderful ones. Let me just give you generic types, since I don't want to pick out necessarily this one or that one. Quite a few of my students have looked at fire as a management tool. And there have been everything from looking at the timing of fire on prairies, that is, what's the effect of a fall burn, a spring burn, a winter burn, on various prairie species, and another student looking at fire in a place that used to be a savanna, had grown into woods, and then because of oak wilt, had the canopy open up again, and she wondered what would happen if that happened, and then you did a controlled burn to see if any of the understory species that might have been in the savanna and had been suppressed by the shading would come up again. And in fact, they did. It was very exciting.
Well,
and other students have looked at fire in marshes, controlling shrub growth. And I've had another student looking at it from exotic species control situations. So I guess I'm a pyromaniac at heart. A lot of people looking at fire. I've had a number of students looking in general at exotic species control and looking at garlic mustard and purple loosestrife and buckthorn and honeysuckle in particular and different control techniques. Several students have looked at the planting stages of prairie restoration to figure out if different mixes have a different success rate in creating prairie. And then I've had students looking a little bit differently at historical data to see if they could track land use changes in a particular area going from archival material to present day, and then using that material to suggest a good restoration type. I've had a couple students looking at people's attitudes toward natural landscape design.
Oh,
and
interesting.
One of those sticks out in my mind just because of the interesting responses he got when he was asking people would they be willing to have a prairie in their yard. And they had responses ranging from things like, yeah, let's do it, this would be great, to no, we can't do it because if we did that, it would be like letting your guard down and inviting a communist attack.
Oh my goodness.
And another one who said, we can't do this because wild beasts would come into the city of Madison like zebras and lions and tigers, which made me despair about the education level of Madison, but some people in Madison. But, I mean, those were the things that just are popping into my head, obviously.
Yeah.
Most of the responses were more reassuring than that. No matter how they felt, it was more reassuring that they knew something.
Yeah.
And another person looked at the history of natural landscaping in the United States and tried to understand what motivated people in the early 1900s versus what motivates people now to do natural landscape design, and found there were quite a few parallels.
Yeah.
So that gives you an idea of the kind of the range, and I'm leaving out many people who are looking at things like land use patterns, landscape ecology questions about mm-hmm. patches and corridors and in habitat and cities, and another one interested in the difference in attitude of people living in a development that has prairie incorporated into it versus those in a traditional development mm-hmm. towards natural world. Just because some of us think that if you live with prairie, you're more likely to be sympathetic towards its maintenance.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the type of a lot of different things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's it for my questions.
That's it for now. Okay.